It is a fact. Veterinary medicine is one of the least diverse medical professions in the country. This is not reflective of pet ownership.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
The lack of diversity within the profession affects patient care. Due to biases and cultural language barriers, veterinarians are not always prepared and equipped to provide the best services. That is why training in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, DEIB, is so important. Today, I have an enlightening conversation with Dr. Nicole Bruno, founder and CEO of Blend, a veterinary hospital certification program designed to train veterinary teams in DEIB in order to have a positive impact on hospital culture. Enjoy our conversation and see the show notes for more information about Dr. Bruno. As always, make sure you subscribe and give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Your support will make sure that we continue our journey in empowerment and impact. Hi, Dr. Bruno. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone.
Hi, Dr. Houston. Thank you so much for having me.
I am really happy to have you, especially considering all the great work you do in veterinary medicine. And then also, I was just so excited to hear about your new endeavor, Adventure Blend. So we'll get to Blend later on in the interview, but I would like to know a little bit about your background. How did you get into veterinary medicine? What was your professional trajectory? Did you know since you were very little that you wanted to be a veterinarian, or was it something you decided to pursue after you entered college?
So, good question. So my story does actually start as a young child. I'm told that I was interested in veterinary medicine as young as five. I had a classmate from kindergarten tell me that recently, but I don't really remember saying the words out loud to my mom until I was 12 years old. But I grew up in New York City, Queens, New York. I was just home this past weekend, so I'm very nostalgic about, you know, being a New Yorker. But, you know, I decided at 12 that I wanted to be a veterinarian. I grew up in an apartment where I couldn't have pets, but there were a lot of stray animals in the neighborhood. And I remember just as we would be waiting to find a parking spot outside of our apartment, I would just see these animals and want to go to the store and buy food and take care of them and bring them into our house. And since we couldn't have pets, it was just like, I couldn't do that. And so I mentioned those words to my mom. She made some phone calls. My mom was an educator and realized, you know, how important representation and exposure is for children. And so she, before I like set forth in this, I want to be a vet, she wanted to make sure that I knew what being a veterinarian was. And so she drove me up to Yonkers, New York, which is like 45 minutes outside of the city. And I met two Black men who were veterinarians from Tuskegee, and that sealed the deal for me. I wanted to be a vet.
Wow, what a story. So you adopted all of those pets in your community?
I did not. I did not. I think I may have found a home for one of them. I convinced my grandmother to take one in. But, you know, for the most part, just even giving them food, you know, was all they needed. And so I had to meet them where they were. And since I couldn't bring them all in, I tried to provide that service for them.
So tell me, as a child, you know, growing up and not necessarily seeing African-American veterinarians in your immediate environment, what was it like for you going up to upstate New York and actually seeing veterinarians at work, and how did they respond to you?
So, I mean, the minute I got there, they just let me go in the back and I was watching them do a surgery. And I remember, you know, you're seeing the inside of a cat and you're just like, this is so interesting. Meanwhile, my mom is like, oh my God, this is so gross. And so, you know, but I knew then that I could handle blood. I could handle what it took to be a vet. The veterinarians were very upfront and honest about some of the cases that they saw in Yonkers at that time. And, you know, I held on to that memory because, you know, in New York City, as diverse as New York City is, the representation in our profession doesn't match that diversity. And so when I returned home and the experiences that I had in high school really didn't give me that exposure for representation. So that is one of the main reasons why my mom encouraged me to attend Tuskegee University for undergraduate, because it was really the only way that I was going to get that, not only the exposure into veterinary medicine, but the representation, which is what I didn't have growing up.
Yes, you cannot be what you cannot see. And that's why it's so important for young people, African-Americans and Latino youth and adults, to be exposed to people in positions of power and in positions of authority, in positions of influence, to see what we can be, right? And exactly. So those two veterinarians really made an impact on you, even so much so that you went to Tuskegee University, which is the institution that actually produces the most African-American and Latino veterinarians in the country.
It does. It is. And, you know, I went there for undergrad, and that was eye opening for me because, one, just being from the city, I only had a certain, you know, my experience was really with small animals, and being in Alabama, it's very different. It's farm animals and, mm-hmm. you know, horses and cows and beef cattle, especially because New York is number one for dairy cattle, but in the South it's beef. And so it just allowed me to get a different, you know, perspective of what veterinarians do. And, you know, just seeing the diversity within the faculty of this different pathways in the profession was also very helpful for me to navigate what I really wanted to do in this profession. And so, you know, Tuskegee was that foundation for me, for sure, to get for my career.
So I'm curious, what was it like for you being from up north, going to a historically Black college and university in the South, in Alabama?
So, you know, I laugh because I think when I got there, I didn't realize the diversity amongst Black people, you know, just being from different parts of the country. You know, you have different musical, you know, genre of music that you like to listen to, or the type of dress that you are. My roommate was from Chicago, you know, and they wore different types of clothing and compared to New York. And, you know, being from New York around that time in the late 90s was a really big musical era for New York City. So that music wasn't necessarily heard on the campus of Tuskegee all the time. So that was also like something that I was navigating early on while it's getting that veterinary exposure. It was also seeing like the diversity of Black people. And I love that because now I have friends in all parts of this country that I can go visit and, you know, just relive those memories at Tuskegee.
Yeah, that is one thing that we all get to observe when we go to a historically Black college and university, how diverse the African-American community is. It's not a monolithic. And when we talk about diversity, it's not only racial diversity in the country, but there's diversity within communities, right? Within exactly. racially identified and culturally identified communities. So I'm sure that was quite an experience, because it was an experience for me as well, coming from Texas. So let's talk about your new venture. I understand you have an organization that you just created called Blend, that's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the veterinarian space. Can you tell us about Blend?
Sure can. So, you know, throughout my career, I've navigated a profession where I usually am either the only person of color in the hospital, and or I am the only for certain doctor of color in the hospital. And for the last 16 years, you know, seeing how there's sometimes a disconnect between the clientele that we see, that we don't represent the demographics of the clients that we see, and how that sometimes can play and it be very impactful on the medicine that we provide and just the compliance from clients. You know, when we aren't meeting them where they are, what their needs are, then we are doing a disservice to the patients that we have taken an oath to treat. And so how I saw that playing out was always where New York City, there were language barriers. You know, New York City is very diverse, and a very dominant language is Spanish. And, you know, many veterinary hospitals are not prepared to handle clients that speak fluent Spanish. And it always bothered me. I'm biracial. My father is Colombian and my mother is Black. And, you know, I remember growing up and being in places where my grandparents couldn't, you know, engage with for service. And as the child, I was trying to be the translator. And that's really challenging in medicine because some things are just not child appropriate to be translating. And I think us as professionals, we have to take a look back and see what other ways can we fill in that gap, you know, address that barrier that we have. And so putting it all together is really what was the foundation of me wanting to form Blend and create a type of training program that teaches hospitals not only to understand what diversity, equity, and inclusion is in context, but how do we apply it every single day in practice?
So can you give me an example? You talked about there's a disconnect between the clientele and veterinarian professional services. Can you give me an example of how that shows up in the workplace about how veterinarians actually service their clients and how there can be some challenges with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the core of DEI. You know, we all have biases and sometimes those biases manifest in our client interaction. You know, we can see a pet owner and take the biases that we have and group them with whatever stereotypes that we have for those groups of people. And that can directly impact on the services that we offer the client because we deem either they don't have the money to provide, you know, the care for that pet, or we don't think it's worth having those conversations because they're probably not going to do it anyway. And we don't take the time to educate because we've already decided that that particular client's not going to do anything. And what I have found is that many clients want to be informed about services and all of the options that they have, even if it is without, you know, outside of their means. It gives them a level of respect that you're offering them all of the options for their pet and giving them the choice instead of just making the choice for them based on what you think. I have been very, you know, surprised at times of what people are willing to do for their pets, you know, because they treat them as family. And we cannot, as veterinarians, declare or, you know, have biases where we just put what we think our feelings are of how they treat their pet and declare that that's the only way that they're going to, you know, follow services or do things. And so, you know, I think that's one example that we see in veterinary medicine that directly impacts what we're really trying to do, which is to educate our clients and provide the best medical care for our pets.
Yeah, those biases really do affect decision making in terms of what doctors say the client should have, you know, or what they're going to provide, making the assumption, like you said, that some clients can't afford some services when you don't know just by looking at somebody what they're willing to invest in their pet, in their family, and in their family member. So, because many do consider their pets their family. And I would also argue that it's something about there are also biases about people of color who choose to have their pets as outdoor pets versus indoor pets. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, some, you know, many cultural groups actually have pets that are outside predominantly, you know, and it doesn't mean that they don't care for these pets. I mean, sometimes they provide like housing for their pets where it's insulated or have temperature control. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they care less about their pet. Most of these, you know, clients sometimes will bring their pets inside when it's really bad conditions outside. But, you know, obviously I've been a veterinarian in New York versus now living in Texas, the climate is different. And so, you know, you can definitely take the time to educate your clients that choose to leave their pets outside. Well, if you're going to do that, these are the choice. These are the decisions that you need to make sure your pet remains healthy, disease-free, you know, and those are those kinds of conversations instead of thinking, well, because this pet is outside, they probably don't care. They probably don't do flea preventative. They probably don't do heartworm preventative. So I'm not going to have these conversations. And a lot of times people will not meet people where they are. I mean, my colleagues will not meet people where they are. They'll just kind of offer an all or none. If you're not willing to do this, then, you know, there's no other option. And that's not always the case. And so these are conversations that are coming up in, you know, access to care and, you know, just providing the best services for our clients and meeting them what their needs are. You know, sometimes clients come in and they just lost a job, but they've taken the last of their money to bring their pet for service. And I mean, for care because their pet is sick. And so sometimes we can't do all of the things. Sometimes we just have to have those honest conversations and say, this is what we can do with your budget right now. But if it changes, this is what we can do if your pet doesn't get better. And those are things that can easily be taught and easily be implemented in everyday practice. But there has to be some level of cultural humility that my colleagues have. And that is what I'm hoping that Blend will bring.
So tell us about Blend. What does Blend mean? And it is clear from our conversation that is definitely necessary in expanding the conversation about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the veterinarian space. So what does Blend stand for?
So I wanted Blend to stand for something to make it very easy, but I could not come up with a whole acronym. And so what I decided to do was I took Blend and I broke the letters down into values or pillars of the program. And this is how we would be offering content to veterinary professionals. So the B stands for building relationships, understanding that we as veterinary professionals have to build these relationships despite cultural differences, language barriers. We have to build relationships with our clients in order to, you know, best serve their pets and best improve client compliance. And so how do we engage with our communities? And realizing that that engagement helps expose children of color to veterinary medicine. You know, I've gone to high schools and elementary schools and talk to the students about veterinary medicine. And many times I might be that only face that they ever see. But for some, that they might hold on to that, just like I held on to that 13-year-old experience. And that could carry them into vet school 15 years from now. The L stands for leadership. How, you know, do we lead our teams and how do we make them more willing to engage with each other? How do we handle conflict? How do we handle diversity within our teams and realize that there is a business case for, you know, profitability? Like, we are a business in veterinary medicine, and the more diversity that we have in our teams allows us to become more innovative and more profitable. You know, E stands for education and also equity, making sure that we educate our staff on DEI and what they can do every day in practice, but also understanding that we need to have transparency in pay. We need to be able to offer mental support. Do we have hospitals that can be of service for people that may have disabilities? You know, how are we designing our hospitals to make sure that we can hire all and also treat and service all? N stands for navigating the unknown, because there's just some things that you can't put in a category, that they're just the unknown, like there are current events that will come up. You know, how do we navigate social media and realizing that people are looking at our social media pages and seeing how do we value diversity? Do we have it in our staff? Do we show an environment that is inclusive for our clients? And so giving a space for that. And then D stands for diversity, inclusion, and belonging. How are we making our professional staff feel like they are included in and belong in your hospital? And do we make sure that our clients feel the same way when they walk in? And so this program is designed to train staff in each value system and help them to create a blueprint of what would work for their hospital, because every hospital is different. Every hospital has, you know, different barriers, different gaps, different demographics of clients that they see, what is their makeup? And so it's not a one size fits all. It's about teaching hospitals how to develop their own blueprint in being more inclusive in everyday practice.
You are so right. Every hospital, every workplace has its own culture, right?
Exactly.
And this concept of Blend, I really love the acronym and what each letter stands for. It's really a place or a space that you can provide guidance so they can create a better cultures, right, within. One of the things that really stands out to me is the end, the navigating the unknown. Now, as you know, I do educational workshops and provide training as well as assist clients with projects in the area of diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And one of the things I always talk about is you call it navigating the unknown, but I look at it, I don't have a name for it, but just this whole concept of having hard conversations, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of times when you talk about race, culture, ethnicity, dealing with issues that are very sensitive that people don't want to talk about, but come out every day in their actions, right? And in their thoughts, which you've already discussed, that sometimes people don't want to talk about those issues because they don't want to feel like they're bad people, when actually education is what frees them from some of the biases that you've discussed.
For sure. I mean, change is difficult. And, you know, a lot of times people get very defensive. But I think that what I try to, you know, emphasize is that I have, you know, biases, and I also represent a certain perspective. There's still so much that I need to learn and grow. And I'm willing to make mistakes in order to grow. And I'm willing to, you know, form relationships with people so that when I can learn from them, we can learn from each other, because that's what DEI is. You know, for me, when I would listen to podcasts, and read books, and participate in modules, you know, I realized that I was interpreting it based on my lived experience. But sometimes when you're talking with others, you realize that there's a different perspective, there's different angles, and then it just opens you up to wanting to learn more and being a little bit more, like I mentioned, you know, being more humble and having some humility about things. Like it's not always black and white. There's definitely shades of gray. There's lots of blending, you know, and so I definitely try to explain to people that education is critical, but having those conversations, those would take, you know, people to really form those relationships in order to have those deep discussions and learn from it. And so that's what I'm hoping Blend brings out, because, you know, veterinary team, I spend more time at work than I spend at home. So these are people that I work with every day, and we're interacting with the public. I want to make sure that we have these conversations together about what are our value system as a hospital, what is our culture, you know, and what are we not going to do and do to make sure that our clients and ourselves feel like we belong at work. I mean, because I don't want to be miserable in my workspace. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so the reality is, in our profession, many people are leaving this profession. We have lots of burnout, and we have a culture issue. And I'm hoping that Blend helps to fulfill that need, you know, of kind of getting back to basics and getting back to the heart of the people that make veterinary medicine what it is.
Yes, workplace culture makes all the difference. And like you stated, that's why diversity is so important, because we can learn from each other. You know, yes. Everybody has, when you talk about diversity, you're talking about diversity of people, diversity of ideas, diversity of the experience. And the whole point to your point is to create an environment where everybody can excel, where everybody can be happy and fulfilled in their workplace, since we spend so much time there. So tell me, what do you have on the horizon for Blend? What are you working on now?
So right now I am in active development for my pilot program, just giving a place for the modules to be uploaded so that we can start sharing within the hospitals and learning of what works, what doesn't, because again, we're trying to create a program that hospitals can create their own blueprint. And so what works for one may not work for the other, but if the program is designed to where everybody can make their own blueprint, then that's the goal of it. Then I've achieved that, you know. I also am very happy to be partnering up with some organizations to do some pipeline development events. Because for me, representation and exposure is very important. And I want hospitals to realize their role in, you know, helping to increase representation in veterinary medicine. So doing programs where we can show them, sometimes it's just as simple as walking into a classroom and just talking to students. You know, it's not complicated. It's not hard work, but it does require being intentional about making that important, you know. And if I can provide that framework to show these hospitals that how easy it is to be done, then that's what my goal is. So for me, this next year is about really program development and tweaking, and also just exposure and really making sure that students of color can see themselves in our profession.
Yes, I'm interested in hearing more about the pilot program you have for the hospitals once you get it up and going. I would love to hear the results in the various hospitals, and congratulations on the pipeline programs too. Like you stated, it's so important that we expose young people at an early age about the opportunities in veterinary medicine as well as other professions.
Exactly. Yes. And even if they don't decide to be veterinarians, then that's important too. That's exactly what I try to tell students. Like, your job is to really just explore at this age. And even for myself, there's so many pathways in veterinary medicine that you may not want to do what I do, but you may want to do what my younger sister does. Mm-hmm. She's a forensics veterinarian. Mm-hmm. So like, there is so much diversity in our profession.
Yes, there's so many things you can do in veterinary medicine, but the most important thing is you have to be exposed, right, to even know that those opportunities exist.
Yes, for sure.
So I wish you the best with Blend, and you're welcome to come back anytime on the Empowerment Zone and tell us more about all the great work your organization is doing.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Dr. Bruno, I always like to finish my conversations with a strategy for college success. I am a big advocate for higher education. So tell me, what school or schools did you attend? What were your major or majors and your degree or degrees? And then what strategy would you provide students to ensure that they're successful in college?
Yes. So I attended Tuskegee University for my undergraduate studies. I graduated in 2002 with a Bachelor's of Science in Animal Science. And then following, I went to Cornell University School of Veterinary Medicine. I graduated in 2006 with my doctorate. And the advice that I have for students when I was an undergrad was really to get to know your academic advisor, because for me, that was fundamental in opportunities to have internships during the summer or scholarship opportunities, because sometimes they send those letters and information to the teachers. And if you're in their office and they know your name and they know what you want to do, you're going to get first access to those opportunities. And additionally, just to know and make sure that you're on course for graduation, because things change, and having check-ins with your advisor allows you to make decisions that will make sure that you graduate on time or can get certain classes in certain semesters. So for me, the key for my success in undergrad was just having a really great relationship with my academic advisor.
That is great advice. There's nothing like having a great advisor and developing relationships with your professors. As you stated, professors are the first ones to hear about those scholarships, internships, research opportunities, all types of professional opportunities. So you want to make sure that you develop relationships with your professors as well as your advisor, as she stated. And then make sure that your advisor, talk to them periodically to make sure you're on course for graduation. There are some classes that are only offered once a year or once every three semesters. And you want to make sure that you take the classes necessary so that you can graduate. So thank you, Dr. Bruno, for all of that great advice. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much again for having me.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.